Well, hi, everybody. I'm already in a really great mood. Every single time I hear that intro song, it takes me and it catapults me into a very calm, positive place. And the fact is that we all need something, whether or not it is music or exercise or talking to somebody really special who cares about us and who we care about, to take us into a really positive place, regardless of what may be going on in the world and going on, or actually not going on, in our life. Well, everybody, I'm Beatty Cohn-Fredos, and I'm a psychotherapist and sex therapist and the author of the groundbreaking book on relationships, For Better, For Worse, Forever: Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I am also the advice columnist for Dan's Papers in the Hamptons. I actually write 2 to 3 Ask Beatty columns every single month, so you can go to the Dan's Papers online, or if you happen to be in the Hamptons, you can actually pick up the hard copy magazines. Love to write, love to hear from you. I'm also a national speaker, of course, a national radio and television expert guest, and you know, every single week, I can hardly believe that I have hosted over 500 Ask Beatty shows here on the Progressive Radio Network. I started off in radio in 1987, and I remember my very first Ask Beatty call-in counseling show on WPRO in Providence. And I was so nervous. I actually came in with a board with every single word that I was going to say written, and I remember the producers, they were looking at me and it was like, really? You're going to be hosting an Ask Beatty show and you don't have the actual confidence to be able to sit in front of a microphone? Well, that happens to be a really, really true story. And over the years, just like with all of us, I've had to work very, very, very hard to feel confident and to feel really self-assured. To speak in front of live audiences, to speak in front of a microphone, to go on local and national television. And people will say to me all the time, but you always seem to be so confident. We are so surprised to hear that you have these kinds of insecurities and anxieties. Well, join the club, everyone. We all have our challenges, because nobody ever really knows what goes on behind closed doors. But what I have found, you know, whether or not it is about hosting a show or speaking, it's taken a lot of will and a lot of practice and a lot of determination. And of course, I hear my late father, Morris Sayre's words all the time when I start to doubt myself, as we all do, whether or not you are a therapist or whether or not you're the CEO of a company. We all have our self-doubts and we all have our insecurities, but his voice still resonates with me when I hear him saying, listen, Beatty, remember my philosophy of life, as he used to say, was to never, ever give up, regardless of what was going on and not going on in my life and in our lives. And I think that the Serenity Prayer, I think it speaks so well to all of us to really accept the things. There's so many things in life that we cannot change. We cannot change, you and I, today, what is going on in Russia and what is going on in the Ukraine. But it's the courage for all of us as individuals to change the things that we actually can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Because so often in my practice, I'll be seeing patients and they'll say, I can't, and I can't, and I won't, and I won't. And one of my primary jobs is to really motivate and inspire people to actually do the things that they really can do. And sometimes if we wait for the feeling, I have a patient right now was having a lot of difficulty, and she will spend days and days inside of her apartment. And I've said to her, I said, you know, the first thing you can do is really open the door to your apartment. You can put on some shoes. And she says, well, I don't think I can. Well, yes, she actually can. And she can get dressed and she can take the elevator downstairs in her building and go for a walk around the block. And we've been debating this for the last couple of weeks. She's saying she can't. And I'm saying you can. And of course, people who work with me know that I am continually giving people homework, and I expect that they are going to follow through with their homework. And sometimes if we're waiting for the feelings to do what we need to do that is in our best interest, we may wait a very, very long time. So my philosophy, if the feelings are not taking us into a good direction, then we have a personal responsibility to ourselves to take action. And it always happens that in taking positive action, what is going to happen to our feelings? Well, you know the answer to that. In taking positive actions, we are going to start to feel better. So if the feelings aren't guiding you in a positive direction, you need to be self-motivated and you need to be self-disciplined to at least think about doing the things that will help you to feel better. So what is the Ask Beattie Show really all about? And, you know, I think about it all the time. I mean, it's really about one word, and the word is empowerment. My goal, my hope, my dreams for all of you is that there's going to be some little thing. It may be something even inconsequential initially that you are going to hear that is going to resonate with you, that will help you to take some positive steps to improve the quality of your life and the quality of your relationships. So on my show, for those of you who've been listening for years and years and years, you know that we talk about mental health issues and sexuality and relationships, and about what we need to do, not just think about, not just dream about, to maximize our physical, our emotional, our psychological well-being despite the stressors. So I live by a mantra, and I really try, and of course I don't succeed perfectly every single day in my own life, but my mantra is to acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can. I mean, we know that we can't change our history, the things that continue to get in the way of our life and get in the way of our being able to live a joyful life. And what I hope, because for a lot of people, this is really something that is difficult to do, to take that first step. And what I hope I've convinced you over the years is that we don't need to navigate this journey on our own. Could you think about it? Look at these sports athletes. You know, when I was playing competitive tennis in Canada, my dad was my coach. That was it. It was a team of two, my dad and me. And you look at now in the world of sports, they have a variety of different people that are on the team that are attending to every and all of the athletes' needs. And of course, we can't have teams like, Naomi Osaka or like Serena Williams. But what we can do is that if we're having difficult times, and we all go through difficult times in our lives, they're reaching out to family, not toxic family, but healthy family and friends, and if need be, professionals, will ultimately make our life journey easier and lice alienated and lonely. So every single week, and my husband was asking me, he says, you ask the same questions every single week at the introduction of your show. Well, yes, these questions, the questions of how am I doing in various different parts of my life, happen to be questions that we actually need to ask ourselves, not only on a weekly basis, but on a daily basis as well. So here I go. How is your mental health? How are you feeling this week? Is your depression improving? What about the anxiety? Are you having fewer or more panic attacks? And if you're finding that you are in a downward spiral, and despite the exercise and the plant-based diets and the meditation and the walks, if you're finding that you're still kind of going round and round in circles and that you're still not feeling well, you know what my answer is, that you need to actually reach out and get some professional help, and it can really make all the difference in the world. I mean, after all, you know, there are 17 million plus adults in the United States who are suffering from depression. And what I'm hoping, and I think what's happened in the last couple of years, which is really a positive thing, despite the challenges of the pandemic, is that mental health issues are really come much more to the forefront than ever before. I mean, you look at all of the shows and the advertisements on televisions, and athletes who are bravely coming out despite the fact that they're getting millions of dollars for endorsing certain medications and certain products, that at least people are really talking more and more and more about mental health issues. So again, you don't need to do this on your own. You know, so many people that I've seen over the years, it's now over 35 years that I have been in private practice here in the United States. I think the number one thing that people will tell me is that I wish I hadn't waited so long to reach out and ask for help. So again, I'm hoping that my message about seeking professional help, of course, you have to be very, very, very careful who you are going to choose to work with you in the mental health feel, because trust me, just like doctors, just like lawyers, all mental health professionals are not the same. And it is just so important that if you are planning on getting some therapy, that you get a referral from somebody that you really, really trust. And even then, sometimes the connection, sometimes the chemistry just doesn't work. And that doesn't mean that there is something wrong with you. It may take a couple of rounds before you are going to find a mental health professional who is going to get you, and who are you going to be able to really feel comfortable really talking about you know, your innermost feelings. So in the How Am I Doing Beattie Confredo's intro every single week, you're looking at your mental health, and hopefully you are going to do something if things are not going well. And again, about your relationships, hopefully you are someone fortunate, you know, who has people in your life who you really care about and who really care about you, and that you're able with this people, and you're not going to be able to do this with everyone, to express your innermost feelings and thoughts to somebody who has compassion and respect for you, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And if you're finding that in any of your relationships that things are not going in the way that you would like them to go, the importance of speaking up, the importance of being able to say to somebody, I don't like the way you spoke to me right now. I don't like the trajectory of our relationship. I love you. I care about you. I want this relationship, but we really need to talk about some things. Because what I have found over the years is that people, everybody, we want to try to avoid conflict. We don't want to have arguments. We don't want to have upset. And yet, if we don't speak up, if we don't set boundaries for ourselves and for others, people can very typically just walk all over us because we let that happen. In fact, over the weekend, and I do see people on the weekend, most of my practice, both here in New York City and also in East Hampton, is still primarily on Zoom. So I had a number of Zoom sessions over the weekend. And, we're looking at three separate women's relationships, one relationship of 50 years, one relationship of 1 year, another relationship, I think it was about 15 or 25 years. And there was really a common theme that in all of these three relationships, there were issues from the very, very beginning. But for a variety of reasons, mostly, I suspect, because we want to avoid conflict and upset, these women, they never really spoke up. They never told their partners that they were upset about a variety of things. And as I was explaining to these women, in their individual sessions, that what that really happened is that they were enabling and almost even encouraging and allowing behaviors that were not in their best interest, but that they were dancing a dance. And we all dance dances with people in our lives. And unless we have the courage to really express our own honest voice, things are typically not going to change. And if you are waiting for somebody to change, if you are waiting for somebody to read your mind, that you are unhappy, that you are upset, that you are frustrated, you're probably going to wait a very, very, very long time. And the reality is that we cannot change anybody. If we think we're going to go into a relationship and we are going to be able to change somebody else's behavior, we really need to wise up and really wake up. The only person's behavior that we can ultimately change is our own. So that if things are not working well in your relationships, you need to find the words and the way and the time to be able to speak up and let your partner know. And, I do a lot of couples therapy, and, I don't want it to sound like the men are typically the villains, because in relationships, I mean, there really isn't a villain necessarily or a victim in relationships. And of course, we're not talking about children. But what we're talking about is a certain unconscious deal that people play out in their relationships. So again, if you are in a relationship that is not working for you, and for a variety of reasons, you haven't had the courage, you haven't had the skill to let your partner know where you stand and what is working and what is not working for you, the probability that there are going to be changes is very, very, very small. So this is where, again, I encourage you really very, very strongly that if you are in toxic relationships, dysfunctional relationships, unhappy relationships, that the ball is really in your court and you are going to have to figure out a strategy with, or oftentimes with help, to be able to navigate your relationship so that it is going to be able, hopefully, to go in a more positive direction. So again, my question to you is, what are you going to do? So how am I doing also in my professional life and financial life? Really important that we be savvy, really savvy about what's happening in our business life and also with our money. And I hear people telling me all the time, well, I don't know what's in my checking account or in my business account. And I don't have a will. And I'm not sure about what my insurance covers or doesn't cover. Well, you need to find out, because not knowing is not in your best interest. And what about your physical health? Are you staying in shape? I mean, I see people all the time, and we talk about the diets, and we talk about the exercise, and we talk about nutrition and vitamins and nutrients. And yet it's very challenging for a lot of people to really stay on course. And of course, there are a lot of consequences if we are not taking care of our health. And of course, this is something that Dr. Gary Null talks about every single day. So the question, and of course, people, they probably get really tired of me asking the same question over and over and over again. But the question really is, are you living your life in all these ways, in ways that are really in your best interest, whether you're looking at goals, whether you're looking at self-care in terms of sleep, you know, or sex? Because I think it is so easy, right, to be fully truthful with ourselves. We make a lot of excuses. It's too hot, it's too cold, I'm too tired, and the list goes on and on and on and on. And yet, what happens when we don't step up to the plate? It is our avoidance and denial and blame and self-blame and defensiveness that help keep us in the same place, or at worst, in a downward spiral. Because it does. It takes a lot of courage to be willing to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can the things that continue to get in the way of our life. And it is also very difficult. And it does take a lot of courage to acknowledge our own role in what it is that we are doing, or what it is that we are not doing, that keeps us depressed, that keeps us anxious, that keeps us in toxic relationships. So, you know, the bottom line is that if we don't step up to the plate and confront our demons, the old and the new, it becomes increasingly more and more difficult to fully enjoy our life and relationships. So I leave you with the same weekly question. It may sound boring, it may be repetitive, but the real question is, what are you going to do? So here's hoping that you are going to have the courage. And it does take a lot of courage, and it takes incredible courage for people to reach out and ask for help, to do the necessary work to change your life in ways that it is hard to even imagine how much better your life can actually be if you do the necessary work. So what I'm hoping that this weekly intro is something that is definitely, definitely going to be motivational and really inspirational, because you have to be honest. You really have to be honest with yourself. I think we fool ourselves. We fool ourselves in a lot of ways. So by the way, the call-in number, and I would love, love, love to hear from all of you. The call-in number right here on the Ask BD Show here on the Progressive Radio Network is 888-874-4888. And we can discuss and we can debate and we can talk about any and all of the issues, and also issues that I haven't even mentioned that really may be on your mind. You know, I got an email last week from a reader who reads my Ask BD column in Dan's Papers. And the first thing she said was, she says, you know, I have never, ever written a columnist before. And I thought this was such a really cool thing that she did. But I had written something about relationships, and she had some questions and she had some differences of opinion, and it was just so great. So we had this email going back and forth. So I am encouraging you to do exactly the same thing. And every week, I mean, you really have an opportunity to call me and ask me any questions that are on your mind, things that may be working for you in ways that are really not in your best interest. So as the Nike slogan tells us, just do it. Again, the number is 888-874-4888. Well, I don't know how many of you have read in the New York Times, and this was just on March the 18th. How long should it take to grieve? Psychiatry has come up with an answer. And there's been a lot of people who have been commenting, including me, on Facebook. So just to give you a little bit of background, okay? And this piece was by a woman, Ellen Berry, who writes for the New York Times. Okay, after more than a decade of argument, psychiatry's most powerful body in the United States added a new disorder this week to its diagnostic manual, prolonged grief. By the way, we have a diagnostic manual, which is the DSM-5, that lists all the diagnosis and all the symptoms that we in the mental health profession use. And if people are in the insurance world, these codes have to be submitted to the insurance companies. So here we have a brand new diagnosis, prolonged grief. The decision marks an end to a long debate within the field of mental health, steering researchers and clinicians to view intense grief as a target for medical treatment at a moment when many Americans are overwhelmed by loss. The article goes on to say the new diagnosis, prolonged grief disorder, was designed to apply to a narrow slice of the population who are incapacitated, pining and ruminating a year after a loss and are unable to return to previous activities. To me, it sounds like a lot of depression, a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder. As you can probably tell, the last thing I believe that we needed was another diagnostic category. But its inclusion in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, means that clinicians can now bill insurance companies for treating people for the condition. And it will most likely, of course, so much of this has to do with business. It will most likely open a stream of funding for research into treatments. Naltrexone, a drug used to help treat addiction, is currently in clinical trials as a form of grief therapy. You know, my comment is, really? And set off a competition for approval of medicines. Yes, we need a lot more psychiatric medicine. Right, and a lot of more psychiatric diagnosis. And I am being sarcastic. I do not think that that is what we need more of in the mental health field. So there's going to be a lot of competition by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. So since the 1990s, a number of researchers have argued that intense forms of grief should be classified as a mental illness, saying that society tends to accept the suffering of bereaved people as natural and that it fails to steer them toward treatment that can help. Well, people who have experienced a lot of grief, a lot of legitimate grief, yes, they're going to be depressed. They're going to be anxious. And the fact that we in the field are saying, and by the way, the magic number that has been decided upon is 1 year. So teams of researchers felt that they could identify the disorder, the grief disorder in quotes, 6 months after a bereavement. And so there was a lot of debate. So they begged and pleaded to define the syndrome more conservatively a year after death to avoid a public backlash. So I, of course, I'm having real issues with this new classification and new diagnosis. It's a trauma. If we have had a loss, if we have lost a child, if there has been a death, we are going through a natural trauma, right? So if the trauma is continuing to get in the way of our lives after months and after years, and if we are experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder or depression or anxiety, my thoughts on this is that perhaps we need more competent therapists to help people deal with their traumas. Over the years, particularly when I lived in Providence, Rhode Island, I was probably one of the go-to psychotherapists for people who had been sexually abused as children. And with the trauma, I developed a methodology of helping people deal with the grief that they certainly sustained as a result of the trauma, the post-traumatic stress disorder that they also experienced as a result of the grief of the assault or what did and didn't go on in very abusive and violent families. So again, I don't understand, unless it's just about money and about the pharmaceutical companies, of course, developing new pills to help people deal with grief. I don't understand at all why it was necessary to come up with a new diagnosis, prolonged grief. Because living through the loss of a loved one, it's a universal experience. And the ways in which we experience and deal with the pain, of course, it is going to differ from person to person. And some of the experts, and this is in the article, say, psychotherapists say that grief is not a problem to be solved, but a process to be lived through in whatever form it takes. And I am one of these experts that absolutely agrees with that. And if we're finding that the depression and the anxiety and the pain and the sadness is not going away, I think that we would be dealing with this in the same way as we would be dealing with other traumas. There was a little sort of a comment about how to help. Well, experiencing a sudden loss can be particularly traumatic, and there are ways to offer your support to someone grieving. Well, okay, we know that. And grief isn't only a psychological experience, of course. It can affect the body naturally, but much about the effects of grief remains a mystery. And I think that for people who've gone through, and these were quotes in the article, many of these quotes I disagree with, going through loss and going through grief for all of us is very, very, very difficult. But many people, including myself, fear that grief, this new diagnosis of prolonged grief, is going to be seen as a growth marker, a growth market by drug companies that will try to persuade the public that they need medical treatment, another pill, maybe two more pills or three more pills to emerge from mourning. And there was a quote here from Joanne Cacciatore, who's an associate professor of social work. Actually, I should have her on the show at Arizona State. And she says, "I completely, utterly disagree that grief is a mental illness. It is not a mental illness. The consequences of grief can lead to serious mental health issues, including severe clinical depression, panic attacks, anxiety disorders, and other kinds of mental health issues." And it was interesting. It was very upsetting to me. There were a lot of comments on Facebook and Twitter about this. And I think too, I want to say something about treating trauma. There's a way to do this. And if you're finding a therapist who is going to help you deal with whatever trauma that you have experienced in your past, I want you to just kind of take this in. There are a lot of therapists, a lot of people who say, look, you know, the trauma, it happened a year ago, it happened 15 or 25 years ago. It's all about today. And what are you going to do today to feel better? Now, I am all about today. I am all about cognitive behavioral therapy. I am all about behavioral therapy, and I am all about doing and helping people to move forward. However, what I have found in treating thousands of people who've experienced a variety of different traumas of every single kind over the years is that we have to go back. We have to go back to the scene of the trauma. No, not actually, of course, but people need to be helped to emotionally work through what did and didn't happen and to be able to talk about it and to be able to cry about it and to be able to express anger about the things that happened and the things did not happen that caused them great grief and great trauma. And going through this process enables people to be able to move forward. And I often say, if there were shortcuts, if I had been able to find a shortcut to help people to not have to go back, to not have to relive the horrors of what so many people have experienced in their lives, to be able to help them to get to a better place in the moment, I would have figured this out a long, long time ago. Because people who know me in my personal life, they know that I am probably one of the most impatient people that you will ever, ever want to meet. I want it now, and I know, and I want it yesterday. And again, I've really found that you cannot say to somebody, oh, well, it's only about today. We really don't need to go back. It happened so long ago. And if you are going through trauma in your life, or if you know people who are going through trauma in their life, and if they happen to be working with a mental health professional who is saying to them, listen, it is only about today, and what you need to do today is take a walk. Now, I agree. It's important to take a walk. It's important to take care of yourself. It is important to deal with all the things that you can do today in terms of exercising, in terms of eating well and getting sufficient sleep. But the fact of the matter is that People need to be helped to emotionally process the traumas that they experienced in their life. And it is painful. It is not like going to a tea party. And yet the process of going back and taking people by the hand and literally helping them deal with all of the different things that happened and didn't happen that caused the trauma, that is what I have found to be the most healing and helpful way to help people to really move on with their lives. And for those of you who are listening right now and who may know people and you yourselves may have experienced trauma, I'm really curious what you have to say. And because the so-called experts will tell you something does not necessarily mean that that happens to be the right answer for you. So again, the number here on the Ask BD Show is 888-874-4888. Well, we're going to change subjects and we're going to change direction right now. And this was a column that I wrote for dance papers in the Hamptons. And I want to share this with you. The subject, of course, is infidelity. And my column was Surviving Infidelity. Should you stay or should you go? And just before the show today, I was looking at some of the updated statistics on extramarital affairs. So in one study, and these numbers, they're ridiculously low, and I know that they're not accurate. One study said that 20% of married men cheat on their wives, and 13% of married women cheat on their partners. But there was another site, a blog called Truth About Deception. I had never heard of it, but you know, it's amazing. You just have to Google things and it is amazing what comes up. And of course, we really do need to be careful and check our sources all the time. So what did the blog Truth About Deception say? Well, they said that 67% of married men cheat on their wives. And that is a number that I have cited for many, many, many years. And for women, 53% of women cheat on their partners, on their husbands. So here's the situation, and you tell me what you think about the question of surviving infidelity, should you stay or should you go? So here's the situation. You and your husband, you're in a committed relationship, or so you thought. You love your husband and your life together. Your husband's law practice. This is a true story about patients that I'm treating, okay? Your husband's law practice is thriving. Your three children are all happy and healthy, and you've recently been chosen to head up a major fundraiser for a major organization that is really close to your heart. And you socialize with a couple, and the four of you, you routinely get together, and let's call her Jenny. And Jenny is your best friend and frequent confidant. And what do you discover? Well, you discover that your husband is having an affair with your best friend, Jenny. This is the person who you shared all kinds of confidences with, and she and her husband and your husband, you've socialized for years. So your head is spinning. You're in a state of shock. Your wonderful, wonderful, secure life is unraveling right before your eyes. What do you do? By the way, in a crisis situation, the best thing, my friends, is to do nothing, because you really need to process things before you act in an impetuous way. So what to do? Surviving infidelity, it may feel impossible, and yet I would say that the majority of couples, we're talking about thousands of people over a 35-year plus career, have come to see me in couples therapy primarily because of infidelity and an extramarital affair. So what do? You call your husband and you tell him to come home immediately. He asks you whether there's something wrong with the kids. You tell him that the children are fine, but that you're not. He agrees to come home early. The question then becomes, what to do with your cheating spouse? Again, the infidelity statistics, there's a wide range. But did you know, in the United States, again, studies show, some of the studies show that between 25 to 60% of Americans cheat on their spouses. Male respondents, and this is interesting, in the 51 to 59 age group have the highest infidelity rate at 31%. And again, I think that number is low. And 16% of women, okay, seem to be cheating on their husbands, and 10% of the affairs are starting online. And 40% of online affairs turn into real life affairs. And although cheating, you know, when we think of cheating, right, we once considered it to be primarily a male activity. But as we are seeing, as we look at the data, the incidence of women cheating has continued to climb significantly. So let's look at, let's be pragmatic about all of this and look at the reasons why people have affairs. Number one, marital dissatisfaction. Number two, sexual dissatisfaction. A desire for variety. I love my spouse, but. Number four, a surprise, unanticipated encounter that turns into an affair. Number five, the question that so many people, and I think older people as well, particularly, they'll ask themselves, do I still have it? Am I still the it girl? Am I still the virile man? I need for validation from someone other than my spouse. Or what about my spouse has a chronic illness, and I need some emotional and physical intimacy. Number eight, plain and simple, sexual chemistry. Number nine, consciously or unconsciously, and this is something that I really believe and I have really seen in my practice over the years, is that affairs are wake-up calls that something emotional, physical, sexual is amiss in the marriage. So in looking after the affair, you're devastated, you're angry, you're in pain, you're in shock. The real question comes up, should I stay or should I go? My answer is that it depends. Virtually every couple that I see contacts me, and as I mentioned this before, for couples therapy because of infidelity. And by the way, as the research tells us, extramarital affairs, women are engaging in extramarital affairs in previous generations in numbers that have never before at least been recorded or cited. So once one spouse discovers the affair, and if you think you are going to be able to have an affair and that your partner at some point is not going to find out, Think again. You know, I was talking to a patient of mine, and one of the things that came out was that he was having an affair. He had traveled to Italy, and he was lonely, and he decided that he was going to call one of these seeking arrangement services. And he had a couple of encounters with two or three different women. And I asked him, I said, are you, you know, wanting to end your marriage? And he said, absolutely not. Now, as you know, and I've learned from some of my tech patients, is that everything is on your phones and everything is on your computers and devices. There is a history. So that if you think for one moment that you are in the clear, that there is absolutely no way for your partner or your spouse to find out your history and what you have been up to, you really need to think again. And this has been verified to me by people who really know technology. So again, once the spouse discovers the affair, you have to ask yourself a lot of questions. Do we still love each other? Will I ever be able to forgive? Should we try to mend our marriage? Do I want to leave my marriage for my lover? And whether couples choose to stay together or to divorce, expect there going to be a lot of ups and downs, because people can learn over time to forgive, but you never, ever, ever forget. And the couples that I work with and have worked with over the years are often able to acknowledge that their marriages have been coasting along for many, many years. And there is a reality, and this is where I've always talked about the importance of putting the couple at the top of the list of priorities. When we're dating, when we are in new relationships, we do everything possible to prioritize our relationships. And yet, look what happens. Look what happens over the years. We let ourselves go in a lot of different ways. The children, the career, financial concerns, you know, coupled with the pressures of day-to-day living, almost always occupy the number one spot in people's lives. And herein lies the lethal mistake that couples continue to make day in and day out. And be honest with yourselves. If you happen to be someone who's in a relationship right now, ask yourself, do you really prioritize the relationship? Do you really take care of the relationship? Just like taking care of a garden, you have to water the soil. You have to take care. And yet we forget about that. We forget about that in our relationships. After all, plants and flowers, they are going to die if they're not watered and tended to. And the same goes for a marriage, and the same goes for a relationship. So there's some points to ponder. Points to ponder here. Is the couple sincerely interested in mending the marriage? If the answer is yes, that is great. Is the couple willing to work with a competent marital therapist? And again, believe me, all therapists are not the same, so do your homework. With a competent marital therapist who can help them to understand what happened and aid them in moving forward. Mending a broken heart and a broken marriage, it's going to take some time. So I ask you the question, are you willing to participate in a painful process? Again, this is not going to be a tea party process, with the hope that your marriage can potentially be better and stronger than ever before. On the other hand, you may find yourself in a situation where either you or your spouse wants a divorce. And if that is the case, you need to find yourself a competent divorce attorney who will help you to protect your interests in terms of custody, visitation, alimony, child support, and even hidden monies that you may be unaware of. Because if there's been deception in the marriage, You don't know what other surprises you may discover. So learning what your next steps are in terms of finding the right lawyer, I mean, that's a whole other subject. But, you know, the thing that is so important is that rather than putting your time and energies, you know, into finding a lawyer, think about whether you would rather put your time and energies into trying to resurrect your marriage and your relationship. And the good news is that the majority of couples that I have worked with over the years, they succeeded. It was hard. It was not an easy road to travel on. But the couples have told me, and I've been party to all of this, that their marriages were happier and stronger and more sexually and emotionally satisfying after the affair. You know how sad it is, but it's really true that most of us, we need a crisis in our lives before we're willing to make some changes. And I think it is the Chinese symbol for crisis is opportunity. So if you are in the midst of a relationship crisis, such as an affair, this is an opportunity. It's really an opportunity to make things better. So what are the lessons worth learning? Because I always talk about lessons to be learned. Number one, prioritize your marriage. And if you find that your own individual issues, be they emotional, psychological, psychiatric, physical, or sexual, are getting in the way of your life and relationship, give yourself permission to get some help. And a good marriage is dependent on two emotionally healthy individuals. And when problems arise, as they do in all of our marriages, don't bury them or deny them and avoid tackling the issues head on, pretending that they will disappear on their own. That, my friends, is magical thinking. Be willing to try to resolve your problems on your own. And if you're finding that you're really going around in circles and it's the same subjects over and over and over again, and that nothing is getting resolved, please, again, give yourself permission to reach out and ask for good professional help. And I really hope, you know, I hope, first of all, that you are not going through a situation where you have been betrayed. But if you are, the good news is, again, this is something that I've experienced with, you know, with thousands of people, is that if people are committed, if people really care enough, that anything is really possible and that things can actually really turn around and things can be better than people ever really dreamed possible. So where has this time gone? It goes so fast, and I had a lot more things to talk with you about, but it's good that every single week I have an opportunity to continue to address important issues that hopefully will be really helpful to you and your life. So I'm going to leave you with my two weekly messages, and I hope that you're really going to take this in. The first, of course, is to do everything that you can possibly do to be good to yourself and live your life in ways, in your relationship in ways that are really in your best interest. And number two, when you look around the world and you look at the crisis in Russia and in the Ukraine and in the crises really that permeate countries and people all around the world, the fact is that we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to care for each other and learning to love each other. So again, I hope you enjoyed today's show. I know that it was heavy, and I hope that you will be able to take some of this in, and if you need to, you can go to the Progressive Radio Network archives and listen to all of my shows. It's great. It's over 500 shows, Ask Beattie shows that you can listen to in the archives. So again, have a really, really good rest of the day. And I will talk with you next Monday and every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on the Progressive Radio Network. So goodbye, everybody. Be good to yourself. Love each other. And we'll talk next week. Bye-bye.